Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 10th of April, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. It is wonderful here in Plymouth. Blue sky, sunshine, but a little bit cold.
Right. We're going to start off with The Guardian. This article, Eric Gill, Can We Separate the Artist from the Abuser? Now, Eric Gill, probably known to most, particularly outside the UK, because of the Gill Sans typeface. It seems to be one of the most popular. Perhaps if people understood what kind of man Eric Gill was, it would not be the case. But this is the whole point of this article, and also some BBC coverage on the Radio 4 Today programme this morning. So the headline of this article in The Guardian is Eric Gill, Can We Separate the Artist from the Abuser? They say Eric Gill was one of the great British artists of the 20th century and a sexual abuser of his own daughters. A new exhibition at Ditchling asks, how far should an artist's life affect our judgment of their work? And of course, just in case anybody doesn't know, his private diaries came to light a number of years ago, and they showed that he had abused his daughters, Petra and Betty. He had also committed incest with his sister, Gladys. And he had also decided that it might be interesting to experiment sexually with a dog. So this is a nice gentleman, as you can imagine. The article in The Guardian here saying, last October I was one of 25 delegates at a workshop day at the Ditchling Museum of Art and Craft, a small but beautiful gallery whose acclaimed spaces are dedicated mostly to displays of work by Eric Gill and the many artists and makers who followed him to the Sussex Village after he and his family moved there from London in 1907. Entitled Not Turning a Blind Eye, the purpose of this event was to begin a process that would, in time, we were told, lead to the museum dealing more publicly with the subject of Eric Gill as an abuser. Well, the way they've decided to deal with that is to run more exhibitions. So here we go, starting the 29th of April, and that's really what the purpose of the Guardian article and the BBC coverage is to advertise this exhibition, Eric Gill, The Body, begins on the 29th of April 2017 at the Ditchling Museum of Art and Craft. As part of this, to celebrate this man and his wonderful work, they have commissioned this piece of work, which is a co-commission. The entire exhibition is a co-commission between the Ditchling Museum of Art and Craft and Brighton Festival, in a separate space. Features a new installation by Pilkington, Doll for Petra 2017. So that's what you see on screen at the moment. It's inspired by a wooden doll carved by Gill for his four-year-old daughter Petra in 1910. I find this extremely disturbing because what is going on here, Brian, in my opinion, is the normalisation of paedophilia. Because if we do not separate the man from his work, if we don't look at his work and say this is the product of a deranged mind, then we are, what, accepting his behaviour?
Which is the aim of the game, I think.
Absolutely. Of course, something that the BBC did mention right at the end of their report on this morning was the fact that Eric Gill's, what do we describe this as? On the front of Broadcasting House in London, we have a statue of a young boy with a man, so it's pretty unpleasant stuff in my opinion. 2013 was the last time there was a big campaign to try to get this statue removed from the front of Broadcasting House. The BBC absolutely refused to do that.
Yeah, and this report put out by Nicholas Stanbridge, is that right?
Absolutely, Nicholas Stanbridge was chosen for that, and of course we have some history with that lady.
So let's bring in the history, and we'll go back a few years now, where UK Column gave a huge amount of support to the gentleman on the front page of the UK Column. Now, this Asian man had been working at Oxford and Cherwell Valley College. He discovered that very young teenagers were being sexually abused and bullied by a group of white men. He did everything he could to try and protect those children. Subsequently, he lost his job. He was then hounded, victimised, harassed by a number of agencies, including Thames Valley Police. The significance is that eventually Nicola Stanbridge, she's centre photograph there, the lady in the centre of the Today web page. She got interested. We had a number of conversations, and we then got to the point where she said, could I meet some of the people, some of the victims, to learn more? That was agreed that we would set up a meeting. No meeting took place, and eventually when we challenged Nicola Stanbridge on why there was no action, she basically said, well, I've spoken to all the authorities, so that's the local council, presumably the police and the school, and they tell me there was no abuse, and therefore, well, there's no story. When I protested that, she accused me of controlling the witnesses. Now, when she was put under pressure, Nicola Stanbridge effectively said that her boss was the person who'd put the lid on the so-called investigatory report into Oxford and Cherwell Valley College, and Kerry Thomas was the man who was her boss at that stage. Yes. So it's a very interesting little saga, but the BBC didn't know anything about Jimmy Savile. The BBC can't investigate any of the major child abuse crimes that have gone on around the country, but the BBC can promote the work of a paedophile.
So anybody that's watching or listening to this that uses the Gil Sands typeface, perhaps that might be a place to start. We stop using that and stop promoting this.
Very
man.
Easy protest.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to Syria. Now, of course, lots of stuff happening over the weekend. And we're going to start with this, because the question is, did the so-called gas attack on Thursday happen at all? The video came from the White Helmets. We've shown the video on Thursday, sections of it, and we showed the same sections on Friday again. And anybody that saw our programme on either of those days will recognise the gentleman at the bottom, because what seems to be happening now is that more and more people are pushing out evidence which suggests that this event was totally faked from start to finish. So let's have a look a bit closer at this. If you remember the video that we showed on Thursday and Friday, the gentleman having his headscarf removed and protesting his headscarf being removed, well, he appears to have suffered in multiple events.
He's incredibly unlucky.
Multiple serial offender in White Helmet's videos, you'd think they would pay for some new actors.
Well, I don't think they're going to be doing that. And we're going to follow through, of course, the events that have taken place since this very, very unpleasant incident. Because the thing we must remember, of course, is that there were real dead bodies used as props, and clearly injured people, including severely injured children, who were very callously handled. In what appears to be some form of macabre street theatre.
Absolutely. Well, following on then, Mike Chervenich here saying June the 1st or sooner, boots on the ground, multiple sources today. That's from Saturday. Well, we'll come on to that a bit more in a second. But in the meantime, over the weekend, more Al-Qaeda funding from the British government. The UK is to increase Syria. Well, they're saying it's for medical aid. In the wake of the chemical attack, UK support will be provided to medical teams in Syria following the appalling chemical attack on Idlib last week, according to Priti Patel on Saturday, undoubtedly going to the last doctor in Idlib. Anybody that remembers the coverage of Aleppo will understand what I mean by that. Global Britain has been at the forefront of the response to the Syria crisis. So first of all, here we have Global Britain again. This is being turned into a brand name, Brian. The Department for International Development, and all its work is being done under this Global Britain tag. And Global Britain will continue to lead international efforts by providing additional emergency medical support to alleviate the suffering of the Syrian people. This latest allocation builds on existing UK support to the World Health Organization, which has enabled it to pre-position supplies and train medics in anticipation of an attack of the kind that they alleged last Thursday. As a result, the World Health Organization was apparently able to rapidly deliver medicines, including atropine and steroids for treatment. That was pretty good. Yeah.
I'm nodding here.
Yes. Ship in additional medicines and provide immediate support to medics, but apparently not hazmat suits. Anyway, that's another issue. This new support from the UK will go to three NGOs on the ground and will provide a wider range of life-saving medical aid right across Syria. Well, the three NGOs, according to the press release, are undisclosed, so they refuse to say who they are, but they gave the game away because the image that they provided alongside this press release, as you can see there, has a white helmet in it. So that's clearly one of the NGOs. And so this is another £7 million and is building, they say, upon the £10.7 million provided to the World Health Organization last financial year. And it is on top of the £6 billion that they say that they raised following their meeting last week in Brussels. What did Priti Patel have to say? This was a brutal and indiscriminate attack, unleashing the horror of chemical weapons on women, children, and the defenceless is not only utterly deplorable, but it is the mark of a craven coward. Those responsible must be held to account, and the victims must get the help they so desperately need. That's why we're providing further medical support, not only for those subjected to the horrors of chemical attack, but for those countless victims of the equally deadly bombs, bullets and diseases that are devastating lives across Syria. It is vital that the international community continues to support the Syrian people, and the UK-led calls at the Brussels conference in Syria last week for donors to step up assistance to the most vulnerable people. As a result, $6 billion in international funding was committed for the coming year. That money is not going to medical purposes. It is going to fund Al-Qaeda.
What's incredible here, Mike, is we've had this, it was a presentation given to the Mansion House by First Sea Lord Admiral Philip Jones a few weeks ago. And in that presentation, he was literally boasting that British aid was going to be the root of soft power, and behind the soft power would come the military power. So we're now finding an open declaration that what many people would hope would be aid to help people, help humanity, is actually now being used as a political weapon in order to what? Destabilise, conduct false chemical attacks, anything that the British government needs to extend its, quote, global reach. And the other thing I'll just bring in there is that over the weekend there was a report that between 300 and 400 US troops had appeared in the northwest of Syria. And this was supposedly a special mission separate from the mission of American Special Forces. This was a special mission apparently directly under the control of President Trump. Now, there was some video footage shown on the internet of these troops and the movement of these troops. They're all in fairly light vehicles, so it would appear to be some sort of reconnaissance operation. Mm. So aid is pumped in, but behind the scenes, everything seems to be gearing up for war.
Well, where's the transparency about where the aid money is going? This is the big question.
Public
and
money.
Nobody seems to be asking for that transparency. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Moving on then, Boris Johnson refusing to go to Russia. We'll talk about that in a minute. He's with the G7 in Italy at the moment, and he's saying, "Well, there are going to be fresh strikes from the United States." Now, the Russians themselves have said that if the US does cross that red line, as they like to call it, the Russians will retaliate. So what we're looking at here is the potential for direct conflict rather than proxy conflict. It's got to be pretty, and it is an increasingly dangerous situation.
And everywhere we're seeing this military mobilisation. Well, let's come back to the American airstrikes on Syria. And a key question which has come up, which is, where did 34 of the 59 US cruise missiles go? Now, very soon after the attack, the Russians stated that not all of the cruise missiles had reached their target. They're saying that 34 didn't. And this was a very significant statement, because this could be simply the Russians trying to test the Americans by saying, well, your missiles didn't all get there. But there was a very quiet confidence in this statement. And the other interesting thing, again, over the weekend, it emerged that actually the Russians didn't use any of their extremely advanced air defence systems in Syria to try and counter this attack. Nevertheless, the Russians keep saying, well, where did these missiles go? Well, if you have a look at CNN, this is pretty typical of American news because you've got former Major General James Spider Marks talking about the attack. So he's boasting that more than 50 Tomahawks get fired. He said, we can assume each one of the Tomahawks had a very good target that it went against. It was programmed appropriately and it struck the target. Now, what needs to happen is what was the bomb damage and what does the runway look like? So he was pretty confident that these very, very expensive $1 million plus missiles had gone off and they were going to hit their target. There was another report here looking at the very issue he'd raised, which is the bomb damage at the airfield itself. But this man says, but the Russians stood by and let it happen when they could have stopped the damage with this. And then he puts up several pictures of the Russians' missile systems. So there's a bit of a conundrum here in that the Americans are boasting we fired off 59 Tomahawk missiles. These are very advanced. They should have all reached the target. But the Russians confidently saying, well, clearly they didn't. So let's have a look at, the Daily Mail. And this was on Saturday, I believe. And here's the headline, why didn't Putin's Growlers, this is their air-to-surface missiles, intercept Trump's Tomahawk? Russian leader's missile protection system failed to prevent the attack on Syrian airfield. Well, they then pump in all of the imagery to make it look at the Americans' total success at their attack. I always go and have a look at who the reporter is, and I was pretty stunned to see this article put together. I think this is the right Twitter page. The journalist called Darren Boyle. He's in the doorway of an aircraft with a gun. But most of his Twitter page is football, quite a bit on drink. And is this really a man to be commenting on this subject? If I've got the right man, I don't think so. Well, the Mail, excuse me, goes on. Here it says, Vladimir Putin did not try and intercept Donald Trump's massive missile strike on Bashar al-Assad's al-Sharat military air base, despite being covered by Russia's state-of-the-art S-400 Growler air defence system. So they're pretty adamant that the whole thing was a failure. So where did these 34 missiles go? Well, one place that they certainly didn't go is to the target, because if we start to have a look at the damage, there's quite a lot of video now about this. Yes, some of the hardened aircraft shelters were hit, but in fact, vast areas of the airfield absolutely untouched. Let's just look at some of the damage. So, yes, there was no doubt that parts of that airfield were hit. There's no doubt as to what was hitting them. This is part of one of the Raytheon missiles, complete with the part numbers. But if we start to have a look across the airfield, actually, there was no damage to the runways at all. Whatever that is pretty insignificant. And certainly the Russians were flying from the airbase within 36 hours. I think it was actually slightly less. And as the Russians and the Syrians have pointed out, the majority of the aircraft remained unscathed. So, Mike, there is just no way that this airfield was bombarded by 59 cruise missiles. Mm. Just no way. So what could possibly have been going on? Well, let's bring in this subject. This is electronic countermeasures, electronic warfare, and it certainly now appears that it could have been Russian ECM, which actually brought down or confused the US Tomahawks. Now, if we have a look at some of the comments that have come into the press over the last few months, people have been warning that the Americans grossly underestimating the capability of the Russians. This comment here, senior leaders across the Army and Department of Defense have noted in recent months the growing advanced electronic warfare capabilities in Russia. And this one is really one of the key statements. Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, commander of the US Army Group, stated in previous interviews that Russia's electronic warfare capability and sophistication is, quote, eye-watering. Now, these are senior American military people. What does he mean by eye-watering? He presumably means America has not got anything to match it. And we'll bring in this one. This US electronic warfare pause, what this is talking about is a break in development of US electronic warfare. The pause provided China, Russia and other rivals with an opportunity to field systems that target vulnerabilities in sensor and communication networks. The US military has come to depend on, as a result, America's once significant military advantage in the electronic warfare domain is eroding and may in fact no longer exist. So the evidence is growing that actually something very significant took place in this raid. And this document here, which you can find online, is all about this subject, the fact that the Americans have been left behind in trying to fight war in the electromagnetic spectrum. And if we come back to the mail, I couldn't resist this. We've got the original headline here, why didn't Putin's growlers intercept Trump's tomahawks? But if we go back in time, here is the Mail talking about this very subject, the American military saying, well, we don't want an electronic warfare Pearl Harbor. Military bosses hit out of the claim US has fallen behind in electromagnetic doomsday weapon development. So we're just going to say here that the Mail seems to have failed to read its own reports. If it had read its own reports, it might well have realised that the success of the raid was clearly not what the Americans claim.
So we've got to ask the question again, where did these missiles go?
Where did the missiles go? There are now some reports that as a result of the use of very sophisticated Russian equipment, some of these missiles simply lost track of their targets and hit other locations in Syria. So there are now people claiming that Tomahawk missiles landed in their villages. And reports are also indicating that some of these missiles simply crashed into the sea after launch. Whatever the truth is, what is clear is that the claim that 59 Tomahawk missiles hit the airbase simply untrue. So let's come back to the start of the incident, which of course is this so-called chemical warfare attack. I'm very interested to see this comment here from the Turkish foreign minister. And he says, Turkey condemns a suspected chemical attack on Syria's rebel-held town of Idlib, describing it as a crime against humanity. The suspected use of chemical weapons could derail the process of Syrian peace talks being held in Astana, Kazakhstan. So this all sounds very credible. This sounds like a concerned country. But we have to go to, well, Belfast Telegraph here, Mike. So this is an article from some time ago, but it's saying sarin gas materials sent to ISIS from Turkey, claims MP Aaron Edem. So very detailed report here saying that something was going on with the movement of chemicals that could be used to make chemical weapons. And we had another report in the Belfast Telegraph here, worth going to read this, CIA, MI6 and Turkey's rogue game in Syria, and claims that Ankara worked with the US and UK to smuggle Gaddafi weapons to jihadi fighters and al-Nusra. And there we are, were aided by Turkish intelligence in sarin gas attacks. So we don't have to look far to at least understand that the situation is nowhere near as simple as the UK and US governments would have us believe, that it was simply Assad and the Syrians that launched the gas attack. And if you'd like to find more detail, you can have a look at, this is a review, London Review of Books. But basically, the book is The Red Line and the Rat Line. It's written by Seymour M. Hersh. And this has got some really very interesting material in it. Obama's change of mind about an attack on Syria had its origins at Porton Down in UK, Wiltshire, UK. British intelligence had obtained a sample of the sarin used in the 21st of August attack. An analysis demonstrated the gas used didn't match the batches known to exist in the Syrian army's chemical weapon arsenal. I don't remember reading this in any of the mainstream papers, Mike.
No.
There's something about the professional style of this report, indeed the book, that I think there's some substance here which needs investigating. Another comment, Prime Minister Erdogan was known to be supporting the al-Nusra Front, a jihadist fraction amongst the rebel opposition, as well as other Islamist rebel groups. We know there were some in the Turkish government, a former senior US intelligence official said, who had access to current intelligence said that he believed that the Turks thought they could get, quote, Assad's nuts in a vice by dabbling with a sarin attack inside Syria and forcing Obama to make good on his thin red line threat. So this is very serious stuff. And we'll just add in this, that of course it was the Daily Mail itself, which published back in 2015, that there'd been leaked emails suggesting that the plan was to unleash chemical weapons in Syria in order to accuse Assad and then effectively invade. So we've asked publicly, of course, Michael Fallon where the evidence is, but at the moment, no sign of any evidence at all from the British or UK governments.
Absolutely. And at the weekend, Putin making exactly that point. If they can't provide the evidence, then there is no evidence.
Indeed. Well, we're just adding our advert. We still have tickets available if you would like to come to the British Constitution Group meeting 22nd of April in Nottingham, the Albert Hall. Fantastic event. If you're concerned at what's going on around you, the news that we're reporting now is truly horrific, that we seem to have the British government acting completely out of control, spending public money in order to aid terrorists starting wars. If you'd like to act to try and stop what's happening, then come to the event in Nottingham.
Right. Egypt, another terrorist attack. So it's St. Petersburg last week, Egypt over the weekend. This report, I think, from Saturday, when at least 11 people have been killed. This was, of course, an attack on a Christian church, Coptic church in Alexandria, followed an earlier attack in another place, Atanta, which is north of Cairo, which killed 25 people and wounded dozens. Of course, you know, we're seeing more and more of this being ramped up around the world as the Western governments come under increasing pressure to provide evidence, for example, for the alleged activities of certain governments. Well, Boris Johnson condemned the attack in Egypt, and he offered his condolences. He said, "I'm saddened and appalled by these attacks in Egypt and strongly condemn them. My thoughts are with the Egyptian people, and particularly those directly affected by these terrible acts. I offer my condolences to the growing, to those grieving for lost friends and relatives, and those suffering from injuries. The UK continues to stand with Egypt against terrorism. These attacks only strengthen our determination to work together with the Egyptian government and people against this shared threat." I think he's lying, Brian.
It's all weasel words. I'm lost for words, Mike, because you listen to these people. They're just despicable. I don't think they know what the truth is.
Absolutely. Well, let's stick with Boris, because, of course, also at the weekend, he decided that he was not going to visit Moscow as he had intended to. He had intended to be in Moscow today, but he's decided that he's going to leave it to Rex Tillerson to deal with the Moscow government. He said, "Developments in Syria have changed the situation fundamentally. My priority is now to continue contact with the US and others in the run-up to the G7 meeting." And so he's decided to go to the G7 meeting instead today. And he's in Italy. He's calling for Moscow, Russia to be threatened with isolation for the international community. a raft of economic sanctions.
So no calls for investigations to be sure as to what's going on?
No. Everybody else is calling for Boris to carry out the investigations, but he doesn't want to know because that would be embarrassing for him. And he said that he discussed plans in detail with Tillerson, and that Tillerson will visit Moscow as planned, and following the G7 meeting will be able to deliver that clear and coordinated message to the Russians. We deplore Russia's continued defense of the Assad regime, even after the chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians. We call on Russia to do everything possible to bring about a political settlement in Syria and work with the rest of the international community to ensure that the shocking events of last week are never repeated. I think if we removed Boris Johnson and Theresa May from government and we replaced them with people that demonstrated some kind of inkling of sanity, then that would be the best way to make sure that the events of last week were never repeated, because millions of pounds would not be going into the hands of terrorists in Syria.
This is so true, Mike, and I think we've got to come back on this business of what people can do. What of course we've got to achieve is that we do get people with normal values, normal common sense, normal intelligence back into Westminster. Until that happens, this is going to continue.
Absolutely. Now, what was the Russian embassy's response to Boris Johnson's comments? Well, they made fun of it, of course. So here we go. Two tweets. If yesterday's statement by Boris Johnson is to be trusted, and Tillerson will deliver G7 ultimatum to Moscow next week, what are probable outcomes? And the most popular probable outcome was a war of clowns. And the second question he asked is, if the G7 ultimatum to Russia brings us to real war, what is your trust in real Donald Trump as a wartime leader and Boris Johnson as his lieutenant? Well, the majority of people were simply appalled by that. So the Russians not really taking it too seriously, it seems. But growing concern over Russian naval activities. This is a top U.S. admiral, according to Fox News. The latest activity from Russian warships around Europe has exceeded levels seen during the Cold War, a top U.S. and NATO naval officer said on Saturday. This is Navy Admiral Michelle Hard, who leads NATO's Allied Joint Force Command in Italy and commands U.S. naval forces in Europe and Africa. She told Reuters that Russia's activities have increased, though the size of its navy is smaller than it was during the height of the Cold War. So I wonder how you could explain that.
Well, we could add to that, Mike, that I think it's tonight on Channel 4. There's apparently a programme about HMS Ocean. So this is how wonderful the ship is and the good works that all of the ship's company are doing on board that ship. And I'm sure those men and women are working extremely hard. But of course, what we've had the Sun reporting is that HMS Ocean could be scrapped, but actually it's possible it's being sold off to Brazil. So at a time when Theresa May and Boris Johnson are telling us that Russia is such a severe threat, we're simply giving away perfectly serviceable British warships. And the other thing I'd just like to add in there, it's very interesting that, of course, UK did not participate in the Tomahawk attack on Syria. One would have expected British SSNs, British nuclear attack submarines, to be launching Tomahawk missiles. Could it be they were unable to? And of course, it was the Times or the Telegraph that reported that more or less the whole of that attack fleet was out of action.
Well, we might have some news on that shortly. OK, now we've got pressure's got to be kept on Russia, of course. And so today is the NATO-Georgia Public Diplomacy Forum, they are discussing security challenges. Georgia is one of the closest partners of NATO and immensely contributes to Euro-Atlantic security, says the Secretary General for Public Diplomacy, who is Takan Ildem. Ildem is in Tbilisi to participate in the second edition of the NATO-Georgia Public Diplomacy Forum, the Georgian Prime Minister opened the conference. He said that the membership of the Euro-Atlantic family is an integral part of the Georgian government's vision for the future of Georgia. So he said that he hopes that Georgia will build the future dreamed of by many young people who have sacrificed their lives for independence. The membership of the Euro-Atlantic family is an integral part of our vision for the future of Georgia, and this also is a sovereign decision of the Georgian people, but not all of the Georgian people, because at the weekend then there was an election, a referendum on the so-called occupied territories. This is what NATO calls South Ossetia. This, of course, South Ossetia was the location of the 2008 war, in which Russia intervened, and was probably the first thing which has sparked off all the anti-Russian rhetoric in recent years. NATO has issued a statement condemning the illegitimate elections and referendum in Georgia's occupied territories, as they describe it. They do not recognise the so-called presidential elections nor the so-called referendum held in the South Ossetia region of Georgia this Sunday. Unilateral steps to change the name and status of the region are detrimental to the efforts to find lasting settlement of the situation in Georgia. NATO allies do not recognise the South Ossetia region of Georgia as an independent state. So there you go. They are determined to spark this all off again, as they're determined to try to spark off what's going on in Ukraine once again, as sort of three fronts right around the southern and western edges of Russia.
Yep.
And I just wanted to highlight, this is being tweeted out by many people over the weekend. The Washington Post apparently saying this, that the war's critics, the critics of the Syrian war, hold racist, anti-Semitic and sexist views. So if you're anti-war, Brian, you're a racist, you're an anti-Semite and you're a sexist.
Yeah. They are being exposed so quickly now by the fact that they have to come out with these statements, which are just clearly untrue, but they're also outrageous. They're desperate because you can see over the weekend, I had a fairly broad look at the internet, looking at what was being reported on Syria. And there are thousands and thousands of blogs and websites and YouTube videos where people are saying, we simply do not believe this nonsense from the mainstream. Pretty insulting statement from the Washington Post there. Perhaps they'd like to come up with some evidence.
Indeed. Okay, defence matters in the UK then. This is a news release from the Defence Security Cooperation Agency, because the UK is now going to be spending £120 million on 1,000 Hellfire missiles. The proposed sale, they say, improves the UK's capability to meet current and future threats by providing close air support. The UK already has Hellfire missiles in its inventory, and we will have no difficulty absorbing these additional missiles. So there you go. We're going to spend some more. These aren't quite Tomahawks, but we're going to spend some more money on missiles, Brian.
Yeah, very shortly, we won't have any surface-to-surface missiles, anti-shipping missiles for our warships. We're going to have warships at sea with a gun, which effectively means they're back in the Trafalgar Age. We're not going to get the missiles for them. We're not going to have the missiles for the helicopters on board ships at sea, but we're going to get some more Hellfire missiles. Those Hellfire missiles, I would say, are going to go to the drones.
Yes.
And then where are those drones going to be used to help inflame the violence in the Middle East and, of course, in all of the regions inside Syria? So this is the British government gearing up for war, but it's not going to be a war that's declared to the British public. This is going to be a proxy war that's done under the radar overseas. Maybe there'll be some media reports and maybe there won't.
Indeed. OK, well, let's look at this one then. 50 MPs and MEPs support to fast-track EU membership for independent Scotland. A group of 50 European politicians have put their weight behind Scotland's independence in an open letter calling for swift, smooth and orderly transition to full EU membership. The cross-party group, including MEPs and MPs from Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Belgium, Portugal, Sweden, Greece, Hungary and Malta, argued that Scotland would be most welcome as a full member of the EU if it breaks away from the UK after Brexit. The group of EU politicians includes German Green MEP Reinhard Hans Butikofer, Maltese Labour MP, and so it goes on. Now, why am I interested in this? Well, in one sense, you might say, well, the European Union, these MEPs and MPs calling for the breakup of the United Kingdom, the Union. But actually, I think it needs to be seen more in the context of this because Michael Fallon was answering defence questions last week, last month. This is the 13th of March 2017, and this is the quote. "Let us be very clear. Scotland is getting all the Royal Navy submarines. A major army base is growing at Lookers. There's a huge investment in Lossiemouth with an additional Typhoon squadron and the deployment of our new maritime patrol aircraft. Scotland plays a huge part in the defence of the United Kingdom." Now, Brian, we have said this before. We've asked this question before. What happens if Scotland remains within the EU and the rest of the UK breaks away from the EU? Much of Britain's defence infrastructure is in Scotland, which is where it's all being moved to. Then that moves into the EU military complex.
Absolutely. This is the double bind, isn't it? So really, they're not bothered about being in or out of Europe because the military, the full military integration is going ahead. And so they see that it doesn't make any difference if Scotland is part of the UK or part of the EU, that military integration is still going to be in existence. But isn't it remarkable that you can have a leader of Scotland who says, "I'm going to give you independence as a vassal state of the European Union"? Yeah. I mean, are Scottish people unaware of what this lady's doing? And also, I see that she was very cuddly there with our European...
Junkers.
Yeah. I didn't think she was that keen on men, but perhaps he's the one.
Maybe
for
he
her.
Is. But speaking of Brexit and the fraud of Brexit, then more suggestions of the fraud, because here we've got the Independent saying Boris Johnson says freedom of movement can continue after Brexit. The Foreign Secretary, they say, claims to be one of the few British politicians to speak up on the benefits of immigration. Boris Johnson has admitted that Britain may continue to allow the free movement of people from the EU after Brexit. He said, "Ideally, I think it could be done. What with goodwill and imagination, it could be done. In the last 10 years, I've been one of the few British politicians to speak up on the benefits. We don't want to close the doors. We simply want to have a system that is balanced," he said. And of course, it's all dependent on what final agreement is reached. And we're going to end with a little bit of Irish news here, because I think, Brian, this absolutely gives us a clue to what the authorities are scared of. Lots and lots of videos. If you watch what's going on in Ireland, lots of videos involving the Garda, the police in Ireland, and their disgraceful behaviour when they're dealing with certain issues with the public. And they're clearly getting increasingly uncomfortable about the number of video clips appearing demonstrating their behaviour. So this is the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors who are saying that photographing or videoing Garda members without their consent and then sharing the images online in a way that identifies them should be criminalised. So they're clearly deeply unhappy with anything which demonstrates their behaviour appearing on the internet.
The fear is that the individual is suddenly becoming accountable. It's not the police that did it. It is a particular man or a woman, and their face appears on the internet. So these people are kindly telling us exactly what they're afraid of and exactly what we should be doing, which is holding individual people to account.
I mean, if they were doing their jobs, they wouldn't have nothing to worry about.
Wouldn't be a problem at all. Well, actually, that was two items of Irish news, because we did get the Belfast Telegraph in as well.
Okay.
So Ireland doing well in UK columns news today. What can we say? We are getting a lot of contact at the moment, emails, telephone calls, even some Twitter messages, people desperately concerned as they see events speeding up. We're seeing a continued march towards more war. What can we do about it? We need enough people to take the right actions. And simple things, taking photographs, writing letters, sending emails, visiting your MP, anything that you can do that is reasonable, measured, carefully calculated through, does have an effect. And that is why I think that we're starting to see major wobbles by the establishment at the power of the internet. So don't sit at home fretting about what's happening. Do something, because it's the action that conquers fear. That's it from UK Column today. If you're not a subscriber, please consider taking out a subscription with us. We need your financial support, and we can only do what we do with your help. Thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.